The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
And to you from the Carter Silbermoon Studios, welcome. Welcome to the weekend. It's a Friday afternoon edition of The Dory Monson Show. Glad you can be with us. So people ask me all the time, Dor, what's the key to your show's long-running success? Is it your blazing intellect? Is it your hilarious sense of humor? I would argue that it's my dashing good looks, but very few people seem to agree with me on that. But I think if we really analyze it, it's that I'm a man of the people. And so I'm going to begin the show proving what a man of the people I am, because just a few minutes ago, I got a tweet from one of our great listeners, Matt Gilbert, and he said, this has to be story number one today. I'm sure what you guys planned was great, but this has to be your number one story. And so, as a man of the people, let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Hey, how'd this get in here?
Well, because Matt Gilbert asked me to do it. From the Associated Press, Dateline, Alaska. Either the 49th or 50th state. We can never remember. I think it's the 49th, wasn't it? I don't know. Okay, here we go. Forget about all that. Dateline, Alaska. An Alaska woman had the scare of a lifetime when using an outhouse in the backcountry, and she was attacked by a bear from below. Shannon Stevens was snowmobiling with her brother and his girlfriend in the backcountry in southeast Alaska. Her brother Eric has a yurt somewhere out there, and the yurt has an outhouse. She sat down on the outhouse only to discover that down the hole was a bear. And she thought at first she had been bitten on the butt by a squirrel or a mink or something small. Her brother heard her scream. Eric brought his headlamp with him to see what it was. And here is Shannon talking about what happened.
Normally when we're out there in the summer or the fall or something, I'm used to shouting, hey, bear, the whole way. And it's just, it was dead of winter. I didn't think to do that this time. So I got in there and sat down on the toilet seat, and something just immediately bit me in the butt. So I jumped up and screamed.
Shannon said she shut the lid as fast as she could. And then she screamed, there's a bear down there. We got to get out of here now. And we ran back to the yurt as fast as we could. Once safely back inside, they treated Shannon with a first aid kit. They determined it was not that serious, but they would go into the city that was nearby, 20 miles away, if it worsened. She said it was bleeding, but it wasn't super bad. They found bear tracks all over the property, and they found out that the bear got inside the outhouse through an opening at the bottom of the back door. And she said, I expect it's probably not that bad of a little den in the winter. And I have a message for that bear. If your life is such that an outhouse hole is not that bad of a home for you, you really need to rethink your life. You really need to work on some self-improvement techniques here. So Alaska Fish and Wildlife biologist says it was a black bear based on the tracks that they found on the property. So there you go. Instead of what we had planned to talk about, because I'm a man of the people, bears attacking from below in outhouses is our number one story of the day. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
What do you think about legalizing drugs statewide? King County did it a couple of years ago. De facto legalization. Prosecutor Dan Satterberg said that he would no longer prosecute any drug cases involving personal possession amounts or less. Heroin, meth, legal in King County. I think it has been absolutely disastrous. And here's why. Drug users buy their drugs from drug dealers. The drug dealing is controlled by street gangs. The street gangs have been fighting for turf and murdering each other at record numbers. That's why King County's murder rate last year was all-time high this century. It's because of drug gangs killing each other, trying to control the turf. Also, it's been disastrous, in my view, for individuals. People who are sleeping in the mud, people who, you know, you look at that Travis guy that was on Channel 4, Seattle is Dying, and he committed suicide a couple of months ago after he murdered his girlfriend. And this is a guy who was so far gone, had been, you know, more than 50 felonies, and horrifically murdered his girlfriend by driving nails into her head, then went and killed himself. I just think that legalizing drugs in King County has been a disaster. But State Representative Lauren Davis, she has introduced a bill that would legalize an awful lot of, I mean, all drugs statewide. Now, she says there are other elements to her bill besides just legalizing drugs. Here she is.
There was one particular night that I will never forget. He couldn't find a vein and was growing increasingly frustrated. He would trace his bruised and swollen arms up and down, looking for a spot. He bent over and tried his foot, first the right, then the left. When that didn't work, he went into the bathroom, looked in the mirror, and puffed out his neck in an effort to inject there.
She was talking about a friend of hers and how he battled drugs. And she says there has to be a better way than what we're doing. And maybe there is. I mean, I'm sure there is. But I'm just not sure legalizing drugs is it. I'm going to talk with State Representative Lauren Davis about her bill. We're going to spar on that one coming up right after the news at the bottom of the hour, 12:30. So make sure you tune in for that. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top trending.
Well, if you needed any more proof that we need term limits in politics, Jay Inslee would never, ever, ever, ever have taken on the teachers' union if there was another election to be won. But now that he has won his third and presumably final term as governor, Jay Inslee will finally now speak out. You see, even if it's a self-imposed term limit, that brings a little extra truth. And Jay Inslee yesterday told reporters, there is no debate about this. There is no reason on this green earth today that we are not giving our kids what they deserve, which is a first-class education in person. I feel very confident on this. Now, Jay Inslee would never have said that before November, because he needed the votes of the teachers' union. He needed that voting bloc. But in a rare moment of political candor, the governor says, look, we're doing our kids a disservice. And the reason the teachers are not back in school is because the teachers' unions, which are the most destructive force in all of public policy, the teachers' unions don't want the teachers back in school, not for public health reasons, but because they want their members to get maximum pay for minimal work. And you know, spare me all the text messages. I'm working harder than ever. Yeah, it's tough for some, but a lot of teachers are working less than ever. And it's much easier to do remote teaching than in school. Now, that doesn't mean that all teachers want that. There are a lot of teachers who love their kids, want to be with their kids, are energized by being with their kids. They want to be back in class. The union will not allow it because the union wants maximum pay for minimal work. And let me give you an example, because I know there are a lot of parents who are despondent, distraught at what's happening with your kids. Your kids are getting more and more depressed and anxious as they sit in front of a laptop every second that they're at home, and then they got to wear a mask every second that they're outside. We've turned our kids into these little drones that are not mentally healthy right now. And there are a lot of parents who want their kids in school. They're desperate because of what they're seeing educationally and with the mental health of their kids. I want to give you an example, because this is not an isolated incident. I want to give you an example of how a lot of school administrators feel about parents. Now, this happened to be in Northern California, called a town called Oakley, which is about halfway between San Francisco and Sacramento. The school board was having a meeting on some video platform. I don't know if it was Zoom or not. But they were having a meeting, and they didn't know that parents could view this meeting. So they thought that they could just talk openly and hilariously with each other about how they feel about parents. And again, if I thought this was an aberration, I'd present it as such. But I know people who are on a couple of school boards right now, and I guarantee you this is how they feel. They're not friends of mine, by the way. They are acquaintances of mine in the community. And I guarantee you, there are a lot of school board members who feel this way. So here they are. They thought they were just talking amongst each other. The superintendent was part of this call as well. And they said, well, they were mocking parents who wanted kids back in the classroom.
It's like, whatever, I wasn't doing anything bad. I honestly don't care about that part. But you know what? Are we alone?
Yeah.
If you're going to call me out, I'm going to f*** you up.
Okay. Are we alone? She wanted to make sure there weren't any outsiders listening. And she was talking about a parent who had sent her a letter saying, I got to get our kids back in the classroom. And then she said, bleep you, B word. I'm going to bleep you up. Let's go.
Sorry,
on.
That's just me.
You know, they forget that there's real people on the other side of those letters that they're writing.
Yes.
We're real community members. We have kids or have known kids that have gone to these schools.
Right.
Have a vested interest in this process, and they don't know what we
right.
do behind the scenes. And it's really unfortunate exactly. that they want to pick on us because right. they want their babysitters back.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. Right. The parents, so if you're a parent who wants your kid back in the classroom, do you agree with what that school board member said? That you just want your babysitters back. It's not about what's best educationally for your kid. It's not about the emotional, mental health of your kid. You just want your babysitters back. Right, right, right. Everybody on this call agreed with that. And it goes on. So this school board member, his brother, has a medicinal marijuana delivery business.
I totally hear that because my brother had a delivery. Yeah, my brother had a delivery service for medical marijuana. The high clientele were parents with their kids in school.
Oh, that's why you want your kids back in school. So you can stay home and smoke weed all day. Is that what all the parents who are listening right now? Is that what you all do? Just sit home and smoke weed when your kids aren't in the house? As that school board member suggested. And everybody thought that was really funny. By the way, a couple points about that. If his brother operates a medicinal marijuana service, the brother cannot talk about his clients, but his brother did. And the school board member passed that along. Medical information. And then, this is hilarious. One of the people on this call, one of the school board members, somebody texted her and said, you know, everybody can hear this, right? And it starts with her, uh-oh, this is hilarious.
Uh-oh. Laura Lanier, just FYI, you guys have the meeting. Oh. We have the meeting open to the public right now.
Nuh-uh.
That's what Lori just said.
Great.
Yeah, that is great. It's great for us to be able to hear the contempt with which administrators have for parents. You just want to smoke weed, get your kids out of the house, send them to their babysitters. And as I said, I do not believe for a second that this is an isolated opinion by administrators who view parents with nothing but contempt. Very revealing, isn't it? And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
And by the way, you know, Nancy Pelosi a couple days ago, she said, even if we get everybody vaccinated, we're still not going to get schools open. It's amazing. Okay, what would you think about legalizing all drugs statewide? I think it's been a disaster in King County. Why would we want to export that to the rest of the state? I will talk to the state representative who is the sponsor of that bill next on the Dory Monson Show. A couple of years ago, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg told me why he was decriminalizing almost all drugs. Well, not almost. All drugs. It was a de facto legalization of all drugs in King County as long as it was a personal possession amount or less. I think it has had disastrous consequences. There is now a bill in front of our state legislature that would do essentially the same thing statewide. The sponsor is Democratic Representative Lauren Davis, who joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Representative, I appreciate you coming on and wanted to have this conversation with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Dory. I appreciate the conversation.
You bet. Okay, so tell me why you, because I look around King County, and it's a disaster right now. There are people sleeping in mud. There are homeless people everywhere. There's heroin and meth addiction that is rampant. Why in the world would we want to export this statewide?
Great question. And to be honest, Dory, I look around King County and I see the same thing you do. That is accurate. The amount of suffering to the people in active addiction and to the community is profound and significant. And candidly, that was the driving force for me running for the legislature. I think the headline that has caught people's eye about this bill is the decriminalization provisions, but that's really the last step in the bill. It's a significant one, but it's really the last phase. The bill is ostensibly about implementing evidence-based and science-based approaches for folks with substance use disorder, people living in active addiction. We have known for ages and eons what works. What works is actually proactively funding really robust outreach services to build yes. those bridges of hope and connection, and then Agreed. Funding treatment and then recovery support services on the back end. But the truth is, we've never done it. We've not funded it. And we've basically turned a blind eye to these people and the suffering of their own and the suffering of the community. And so the bill is really about building a comprehensive, proactive plan to reach people where they are now and to engage people in services and keep them in services and support them all the way. And only when we do that, unlike Oregon, which decriminalized immediately, our plan is about building the infrastructure. And then once you have an alternative, only then do you kind of flip the switch and decriminalize.
Okay, well, but here's the problem. King County said the same thing when they decriminalized. They said the exact same thing that you're saying. And by the way, I agree with everything you just said. I think that we should offer every single person who is addicted and who is homeless, we should offer them job training, addiction treatment, mental health treatment. I agree with all of those things. But to say we're going to decriminalize drugs, if you do that, you're going to have people from all around the country come into the state that is the lowest barrier. And the reason we had our highest murder rate this century last year in King County is because drug addicts buy their drugs from drug dealers. And the dealing is controlled by gangs. And the gangs are fighting for turf. And they're killing each other. And they're just... And I agree with your main point. I just don't know why we would legalize drugs as an element of that.
Great question. So I do want to clarify, I have no intent to legalize drugs. It's really about removing criminal penalties and decriminalizing. So legalization is what we did with marijuana, where we have supply chains that are controlled and we're
promoting. Right. It's a de facto legalization. Nobody would be prosecuted for personal possession amount or less of heroin, meth, any drug. It's not a legalization, but it is.
Correct. And individuals who are engaged in any other crime, whether it's crimes against property or crimes against persons, would continue to be prosecuted. So all the property crime, of which there is a myriad, that would all still remain in the criminal code. It's really about, if I thought, to be clear, Dory, that what we were doing was working, that prosecuting individuals and giving them a felony possession charge was leading people into recovery, I'd be the last person trying to dismantle that system. But the truth of the matter, everything we know about substance use disorder is that it's a disease rooted in shame and hopelessness, and that the way you bring somebody out of that is not adding additional pain. It's actually giving them some spark of hope, some hand to hang on to. And so you're really talking about people that are people in possession of personal use amounts are people almost invariably who would meet the diagnostic criteria for substance use disorder. They have a brain disease, and the beauty of it is that it's a treatable one with the promise of recovery when resources are provided. So you're not talking about people that are committing violent, you know, crimes, and those. It's not geared toward those folks. And frankly, the best way to reduce recidivism is to treat the root of the situation, right? To treat the root cause. These individuals of which you speak, you know, half of my friends are in recovery and have former, you know, are formerly incarcerated and lived in these encampments and all of these things. But mm-hmm. they are today. They're the best human beings that I know. Barring none, without exception, they are living the most incredible lives of integrity. They are living lives of service, and their recovery demands that of them.
I think there are few things more important or noble in one's life than to get control from addiction. I know a lot about addiction. There was a lot of alcoholism in my family. I'm with you on everything you're saying, Lauren, except for... You know, you look at the stats. I've got UW Medicine Newsroom in front of me. In 2017, mm-hmm. there was on average about 30 fentanyl deaths per quarter. As mm-hmm. of second quarter of 2020, we're up to 170. And we were talking about almost a six-fold increase in fentanyl deaths at a time when King County legalized or de facto legalized drugs, because the dealers are coming in. They are getting people addicted to the most powerful drugs possible. And I agree with everything you say, except the legalization part. And I know that's a semantic difference on what your bill says. But why not do all the things you're talking about without decriminalizing drugs?
Sure. And the goal is to do all of those things first. But the truth of the matter is, let me break down what's currently happening to these individuals with possession charges. So in counties and cities that still do arrest, they get arrested. They do a very short stint in jail, generally speaking, because they're not violent and there was no even crime against property. It was just mm-hmm. simple possession. So they're released and then they're given a court date. And then they frequently don't show up because they've been given no services, no access to services of any kind. And they're still in active addiction. So they miss their court date. Then there's a warrant issued for failure to appear, and the system just cycles. And at no point does this individual end up with any connection to services or treatment. What they do end up with is a felony conviction, which will make it very, very difficult to achieve sustained housing and employment, both of which are imperative if somebody's ever to achieve sustained recovery. And so it creates these barriers. So it's not a useful tool in prompting or compelling recovery in its current form anywhere really in our state.
Okay, and I hear you talk about your wonderful friends and they all were able to get control of their lives without the benefit of your bill. And I think that we should still have the legal penalties against drugs as a tool, not as a hammer necessarily, but as a wedge to try. If we want to give people the option, you can go to jail for your heroin possession, or we will offer you treatment you choose. I still think that the penalties, the legal penalties, could be a useful tool for us.
So I'll be clear. I don't actually take issue with what some folks, you know, would call coercive treatment and coercive models for crimes against persons or property. So, you know, models like drug court or some of the things that you're talking about, drug court's a pretrial diversion program. We also have sentencing programs like the drug offender sentencing. I support all of those things. What I'm trying to build is a model at which we really have off ramps from the criminal legal system and on ramps to treatment and recovery at every single point along what's called the sequential intercept model, which is basically the entire criminal legal system mapped out. But what we're talking about here is really intercept zero. So it's people who have not committed a crime against persons or property. And everything we know about what drives addiction is people who their current existence is miserable and they use to numb pain. They use to numb pain from their past and pain from their present. And part of the diagnostic criteria for substance use disorder is continued use despite negative consequences. So if that's in the diagnosis, then it is illogical to suggest that additional negative consequences just for a possession charge, all that does is compound their feelings of worthlessness and hopelessness and erect barriers that make recovery season seem even further from their grasp. And so for all the other crimes,
I hate to interrupt you, but I really want an answer to one more question. We only have about 30 seconds left. Does it worry you that King County has done this, and not exactly what's outlined in your bill, but King County has done this, and in the last 2 years, we have record level of addiction, record level of homelessness, record level of overdose deaths, record numbers of murders in King County. Does that worry you that the one county that is doing kind of what you're suggesting is a disaster?
Those things are all fair, but King County hasn't done this at all. King County has not funded any sort of robust outreach services or any sort of robust recovery support services.
Yeah, they
have. Parts together, it works. They have not, and I would be happy to send you the data, but they've not funded anything of the like that this bill is proposing when it comes to actually doing comprehensive substance use disorder continuum of care. It's not been funded anywhere in our state. It works when we do it, and that's really what this Pathways to Recovery bill is about, actually getting us there.
Lauren, I love conversations like this. I always appreciate people who are willing to come on and spar with me on stuff like this, because I think hearing both sides is the best way to let everybody who's listening form their opinion on it.
And I would argue there really aren't two sides. I think everybody wants the same thing. And
I
really
agree with you on that, too.
That we can find a way to get there.
Representative Lauren Davis, thank you very much for coming on with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And as always, I'd love to hear what you think about what you just heard. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, speaking of coronavirus updates, here's a story that I think needs a lot more attention. A doctor at Johns Hopkins Medical School, he has a piece in the Wall Street Journal today. He believes that current vaccination rates and immunity from prior infections will allow America to return to normal life by April. By April. His name is Dr. Marty McCary. And he says that nearly 55% of Americans already have some immunity through either prior infection, 77%, or coronavirus cases are down 77% over the last 6 weeks. And then if we continue to vaccinate, he says by April, we should be able to return to normal life. And then he was very critical of scientists and politicians who are trying to manipulate the public by hiding the truth. This guy's, you know, Johns Hopkins doctor. He says that the consistent and rapid decline in daily cases since January 8th, even though a lot of people traveled over the holidays, it's reasonable to infer that they're going to decline to levels at which we can safely reopen everything in the country by April with fewer precautions. So then tell me, if that's a possibility that's out there, you know, the story we talked about in the big lead today about how the teachers' unions still do not want the teachers back in the classroom. Why are people like Nancy Pelosi taking this position on getting kids back to school by summertime.
Now, the important point to make on this is where there is a high incidence of COVID, most of those schools are virtual or hybrid anyway. They're not actual. They're not actual. And the vaccination might not make it actual anyway.
We got to have age limits on politics. But she says even if folks are vaccinated, we may not be able to open schools this school year. And over in Issaquah, Harlan Gallinger is a school board member there. And he says, and this is, in my view, I'd love to hear what you think. I think this is just absolutely wrong. He says that the top priority should be this.
Now.
Well, that's Nancy Pelosi.
And one of the things that this community values is minimizing the rate of community transmission as much as possible. And in that context, that's what we've been tasked to do. Now, if we lived or we were school board directors in another place, even Spokane or Mead School District, for example, the community tolerance for transmission is just inherently different. So, but we're not operating under the standards of North Spokane or Kennewick or anywhere but the Issaquah School District and the communities we serve.
Okay, so I mean, let's think about that. So the opinion of people is the most important factor for you? I mean, if we can get kids back in school, if you see that educationally remote learning is a failure, if you know that it's creating unbelievable anxiety and mental health problems for our kids, then it shouldn't be the vagaries of Issaquah versus Spokane and the opinion of people. It's your job to do what's best for kids. And I would argue that minimizing transmission should not be the number one priority, because kids can get this without any adverse health effects. The number one priority should be educating kids and getting their mental health back. Okay, we're going to check the news for you, and then the Fastest 15 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.